All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 89 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We're going to start into our final topic, which has to do with the United States policing the Middle East and the consequences of that. Before we do that, we are going to continue with facts practice. Only today what we'll do is we'll briefly discuss the facts practice rather than do it, and I will show you the new facts practice, which I want to do tomorrow. So, if we go to the class webpage and scroll down, regardless of junior high or senior high, in addition to the research questions that I have here to prompt you to continue looking at this work of art, which when you, by the way, bring it up on screen and look at it really closely, it is obvious that you can see the answers if you want to. This is a very high resolution image. So, you should be able to answer these questions and perhaps find new questions to ask and even answer those. So see what you can do with that for next week so that we're in a strong position to do the history through art. But as for today, we have not just the class notes for last week, but also the junior and senior high facts practice 3A. Let me bring that up. And this is a it's a very straightforward facts practice. It is basically our timeline with certain blank spaces in for you to fill in. So very straightforward. So this one, you should be able to do it in, I don't know, a minute and a half or so. I mean, I'll give you 2 minutes if you need it, but it should be quicker than that. I think it could even be done in a minute, but I'll give you 2. So that's going to be the one for tomorrow, Facts Practice 3A. All right, so today, just briefly here, I want to, you know, again, use this prompt to remind ourselves of the crucial truth about these anchor facts. And I'm going to give everybody a chance to pick something off of the off the timeline and give me one answer to it. And the prompt that we are going to use is, the United States would not be the country that it is today, without, and then go ahead and tell me about it. Okay? So everybody gets one. The sooner you volunteer and pick the one that you want to say, the quicker it'll be out of the way if you don't want to be called on. So let's go. Pick one and tell me the answer. If you need the date, I can help. But, so, Timothy, get us started.
America would not be the country it is today without Christopher Columbus discovering America in 1492 A.D.,
okay.
Because there wouldn't be any such thing as America.
Okay. And also, I mean, what did that lead to? In what regard is America what it is today because of what Columbus did? Give us
led to the colonization of America, which eventually became its own country.
Okay. Colonization of America by whom?
By England.
Okay, by England, or you could, when you're talking about Columbus, you could be more general. You could say it led to the colonization of the Americas by Europeans. The only way you're going to get a country like America here is if Europeans are going to put it here. And in particular, of course, Englishmen, which, well, leads us to another one, you know, right? There's a few here about Europeans and Englishmen and how they contributed to the specific identity of the United States. So, Micah, pick this up and take it where you want to go.
America wouldn't be what it is today without the Founding Fathers signing the Declaration of Independence in 1776.
Okay,
Because otherwise, it wouldn't were president. And if they didn't do this, then it would just, America would probably be a monarchy.
Okay. That's pretty decent. Yeah, right. So you actually said something perhaps deeper than what you anticipated, which was the United States would not be a democracy today, which it pretty much is, if the Founding Fathers had been able to do certain things, which they couldn't. As it turns out, there were limits to what they could accomplish. They were not able to completely jettison the baggage of history. And as a result, the idea of America being a republic has not been sufficiently resilient to resist the rise of democracy in human thinking lately, primarily from Europe. So yeah, America would not be the country it is today, absolutely, without the Declaration, because it made America a republic. And now we have a strange country, which was born a republic and has become a democracy. And as a result, it is a country with a lot of tension in it, with a lot of conflicts and cultural issues that have yet to be resolved. So, yeah, that's a big one. Okay, Piper is next.
America would not be what it is today without Rome and Athens creating the first democracy and republic in 509 BC and 508 BC because the Founding Fathers learned from these examples how to build America.
Okay, absolutely true. These precedents were crucial in the design of the United States. All right, so far we're relying on our old standbys here. I still want to see the most recent ones. Anyway, it's your choice, Sophie.
America would not be the country it is today without the colonization of Jamestown and Plymouth because these were the first examples that America could be lived in and colonized successfully.
By whom?
The English.
The English. Okay, crucially, right? Because we've got to bring the English over here. Otherwise, this one is not going to matter to us, right? So maybe somebody can do that one soon enough. Bria, your choice.
Let's see. There wouldn't be whatever, I forgot the prompt already.
The prompt is the United States would not be the country it is today.
The United States would not be the country it is today without the Civil War because people would still be hating, well, not hating, still be... How do you say it? It's so deep.
Okay, yeah, you are looking for the deep dimension, but you can just say the basics, which is what might still exist.
Slavery,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, the deep part that you're talking about, Bria, which is good to think about, is, you know, the issue of racism and the issue of European imperialism and the enslavement of Africans and so on. Yeah, that's embedded in the issue of slavery. You know, it's a global problem and it still exists today in frightening numbers, but not in America because of the Civil War. Okay, great. Cliff, continue.
America would not be the country it is today without the terrorist attacks of 9/11 because now we are so deeply involved in the Middle East in trying to put down terrorism.
Okay, absolutely. This is the reason why America is fighting the war on terror. Okay, Keen, you're next.
The United States would not be the country that it is today without, if America had not saved Europe from the German Empire in World War I between 1914 and 1918. And this was the beginning of I gotta rephrase this and be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way that events unfolded in Europe after World War I, nationalism rose and America would have to save Europe again in a few decades.
Right. Yeah, so it is a hard one to formulate, but you did a good job. So, the way that I would try to put this, let's see if I can do it here. The way that I would put it is America would not be the country it is today without having committed to becoming the world police power in World War I, which was from 1914 to 19, if we choose the peace. So without having committed to do so, and without having been essentially forced to continue to do so by the outcome, the later consequences also of the way that World War I was fought and resolved. So that's kind of what you're shooting for, I can sense, is that there's two parts to it. There's that element of the policy, right? The Wilsonian, we don't have the Wilson Doctrine, but it really is worthy of being called that or something. The speech, the most famous speech of Woodrow Wilson was called the 14 points. But as well, there was the Declaration of War in 1917. There were a variety of speeches that he gave, which I think added up, deserved to be called the Wilson Doctrine. And then we could say, you know, without America would not be what it is today without the Wilson Doctrine. I think the reason why people don't talk about the Wilson Doctrine is because Americans rejected it immediately after the war. And so, you know, when you're talking about a doctrine that a government adopts, you wouldn't expect to be talking about if the government does not adopt it. And the whole crisis of normalcy and then the return of the, and the normalcy wasn't a crisis, but the reaction of wanting normalcy and then the crisis of the return of imperialism in Germany and the rise of imperialism in Japan and all of that leading to World War II. That was a very mixed period where Americans were trying to figure out what to do and how to do it and so on. So there was a lot of conflict in the culture at the time. So yeah, that's a tough one. World War I is a tough one to state in the way that we want to here. But that's a good one. It became an international police power because of Woodrow Wilson and had to stay as a police power by virtue of not resolving that conflict sufficiently. Okay, so we got two guys left, Ben and then Alexander. Ben, you make a choice. Alexander says he can't talk at the moment. Okay, and Ben doesn't seem to be responding. All right, so anyway, the rest of you guys are on target. We still didn't, yeah, we did Civil War, World War One, World War II, and well, today we're going to do the Truman Doctrine's impact on America in becoming much more specifically the way that it is today is what we're going to be seeing. Okay, so we're going to look at this decision by the United States to become the police power of the Middle East. How did that happen? Well, we already have, you know, with the Truman Doctrine, specifically and broadly, you know, we already have the cause. And we've seen this map repeatedly, but let's go ahead and just remind ourselves again, right, that this is the situation after World War II. And on the blue side, we have the United States protecting everybody that's in blue from this behemoth in red, which consists primarily of communist Russia and its various conquered satellite states, Poland and Romania and so on, including East Germany, which is kind of in lighter pink or whatever you want to call that. And so this is the Truman Doctrine in its kind of original setting, its most basic setting, in response to the situation that arose after World War II. It's, we need to be a permanent police power. And why? Well, point to this. Point to this. Because communism, as people would say nowadays, right? And nowadays people are so always looking for the catchiest, I don't know, goofiest, ungrammatical way to say things, and it seems to be the in thing to do. So why did America choose to, you know, adopt the Truman Doctrine? Because communism. Because of communism. Because of the danger of it spreading and basically leading to the mass enslavement of all Europeans at the hands of the Soviet rulers, who already had enslaved their own peoples. And it's so obvious that communism is just basically slavery. And for anybody who is, you know, capable of not evading difficult intellectual topics. And this was the ultimate symbol of it. Just an elegant, if tragic, and very scary demonstration of the true nature of communism. Because here is the Iron Curtain going up. Here is the wall. And you can see there's a soldier right here putting some spackle. The next brick goes on there. The next layer of the wall goes up. Over here, you have these people watching it happen on one side of the wall. Meanwhile, you have the barbed wire fence going up combined with it and so on. And these people are building the wall. They're soldiers and construction workers. And why? Why are they putting this wall here? King?
Because people don't want to be enslaved. The, you know, Russian and communist, you know, people will try to escape. You know, if there's no wall there, just walk over and become free.
Yeah, exactly. Because what's the wall here for? It's not to keep these people out. It's to keep the people on this side, on the left side, in. To keep them, force them to live a certain way. You know, which is the definition of slavery, right? To be free means to be free from force. When you're a slave, you are forced to live a certain way. And that was exactly the situation for all of the people on the communist side, was, as Keane would put it, given the choice, the free choice, they would leave. They would walk across that wall and go to the other side. And so how are you going to have communism if you can't force people to do it? Well, really, there is no answer to that. And unless there's one other very peculiar way, which is true, which is if you can convince them that to be a slave somehow is noble or somehow is the right thing to do, which might sound like some kind of impossible proposition, but it's not. It is possible to convince people, and there are people that specialize in it, that to give up your freedom is good and so on. And so there have been cases of that, and it's very strange, but it's very instructive as well. In this particular case, it was all about trying to accelerate the spread of communism. And in this case, absolutely by force. Don't let the people out, force them to become communists, and don't let them out. So of course, the United States, after World War II, looked at the situation and having invested so much to protect these countries and save them and so on, it said, all right, we can't go back to normalcy. We've got to police this permanently. We're going to set up on the other side of this wall here with our guns, and we'll protect the people over here to make sure that this wall can't spread further, and hopefully every once in a while somebody will escape and we'll let them over here if we can as well. Bria, go ahead.
How long was the Berlin Wall up?
How long was the Berlin Wall up? Good question. It came down in 1989 as communism was falling. When it was constructed, exactly, I'm not sure. That's something that I have forgotten. If it went up, to some extent, there were barriers there, you know, as soon as in the 1940s. But I think the wall itself was not constructed as is until afterwards. But you know, I don't have stats on it. So you'd have to find out if it was in the 40s or in the 50s. I'm not entirely sure. Keen, maybe you've got the facts at your fingertips.
I just Googled it. The actual Berlin Wall that separated, like, in West Berlin, was, they say it was thrown up overnight, 13th of August, 1961.
Wow. Okay, but there was, yeah, the wall was constructed that late, but this confrontation and this, you know, very limited freedom of movement and so on was already in place. So there was already some kind of policing, let's say, of the border with the barbed wire fence and stuff like that before the actual wall. That's what I thought, but anyway. Okay, so, yeah, we've got... Now, what does this have to do with the Middle East? Well, remember, we're going to go here to the Soviet Union and the gigantic size of it. And I just want to remind you of what we read in that document, right, concerning the spread of communism. What the heck was that? I didn't want that. I actually, and there's Mr. Powell living in Soviet Russia. I don't want that. Okay, let's try that again. Annotate. And I wanted just to be able to draw. Okay. So, we had this barrier go up kind of right here, right? Geographically speaking, we saw the separation between the red and the blue kind of along this line. Okay. And so we've got communism pushing out to here and being contained. Containment was the essence of the Truman Doctrine. Right? And we saw that in the Truman Doctrine specifically, we have mention of Greece and Turkey, these two countries. We've got Greece mostly for symbolic reasons, mostly because, you know, Greece is the birthplace of democracy. We don't want that to be a communist country. And Turkey more for strategic reasons, because one thing that you can do to contain the Soviet Union is you can deny it access to control of the Black Sea and then the Mediterranean Sea. That would, you know, heighten the danger if the Soviet Union or communist Russia could have access to the Mediterranean Sea completely unfettered. So the United States stepped in and said, we're going to protect these two countries. And then in that very same speech of 1947, the president was very general in saying, I believe it should be the policy of the United States of America to support free peoples, whether they are fighting against minorities who want communism within their country, such as in Greece, or whether they're fighting external pressure from a country like the Soviet Union, right next their neighbor, that wants to conquer them, essentially. Okay, so we got reason number one here for getting involved in the Middle East because, well, Turkey is in the Middle East. It's right on kind of the border between Europe and the Middle East, so-called. And all of these countries here basically were in danger of having to, right, deal with the threat of the expansion of communism. So that's going to be reason number one for the extension of the Truman Doctrine to the Middle East. I mean, even as stated, it pretty much started to include the Middle East with Turkey. Okay, now let's talk about reason number two. So we got 1947, reason number one, Truman Doctrine says we're going to protect Turkey and, you know, by extension, other countries here, if we deem them to be free peoples fighting the expansion of communism, then we're going to help them too. And so a country like Iran, for instance, at first was a country that got a lot of support from the United States. At various times, Afghanistan was a country that got support from the United States, as well as others within this sphere, for the purpose of resisting communism. Okay, but now let's look at purpose number two, which I'll label differently. Actually, I probably won't be able to... Yeah, I guess I'll be able to do this. Okay, purpose number two has to do with this little sliver of land here, which is right in the middle, geographically speaking, of the Middle East. And so what did it have to do with? Well, we talked about what happened in World War II with the 50 million plus casualties. And that included this part of the war, which is called the Holocaust, which was this just absolutely shockingly evil campaign undertaken by Nazi Germany to exterminate people of Jewish descent within Eastern Europe, especially within Germany, within Poland, within any of those countries that the Germans wished basically to rule over and have as their greater Germany, they called it. So there were people within Germany that were Jews, and they were exterminated by to a total of some 6 million at least Jews and another 4 million other people as well killed in the Holocaust. And these are entirely innocent people, but for the Germans who were racists, they looked upon them as being unworthy of living within the German nation. And this was just the most recent case, and it turned out to be the worst and of all possible ones, of people in Europe feeling that way about Jewish people. So when we talk about Judaism, Jewish people, we're talking about something that, give me a second here, I'm going to break for a minute just because of noise that I want to escape. Sorry to interrupt this, but give me a couple minutes here to set up elsewhere. Still can't get away from all this construction noise. It depends if I go to a different room. Sorry. You'll see.